Are we allowed to enjoy this?
Keane O'Mahony is literally an opposition scrum half's nightmare.
People say I refereed lots of matches when I actually played.
The Red 78 with Alan Quillen and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
OTB AM with Gillette. Proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
Now, we're going back to the Champions League. I'm delighted to say Philippe Auclair is with us. Philippe, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
There's lots to talk about, and we'll talk about Qatar in a moment, but I want to talk about the Champions League and your instinct about the managerial merry-go-round that is happening at the moment. Is this a carousel that doesn't stop until Zidane is in Paris and Pochettino is in... Or is that a...
nothing happens.
Yeah, because everything is possible here, right?
Absolutely, everything is possible. It's been a bit wild over the last few days because on one hand, we've had information that Mauricio Pochettino was on about to sign a contract extension with PSG. Some people understood that as being... putting pressure on possible suitors like Manchester United so that they would have to pay more compensation. Then Zinedine Zidane is talked about as being the next PSG manager, which to people who have followed the story for a while would be very surprising. Zidane has never shown the least interest in going into that madhouse that is PSG at the moment. And also, according to people who are close to him, he would like to wait until next summer before deciding on which turn his career is going to take. He will have just turned 50. He's got time on his hand. He's also got the prospect of perhaps taking over from Didier Deschamps after the 2022 World Cup, which is a vowed ambition. And so there is no reason for him to press matters and to join PSG, especially where they are at the moment. And I have to say, from a French point of view, it all feels like there's a lot of... what is missing outside when we're looking outside our window, which is hot air, around what is happening there? Because it starts from this premise that Manchester United is a club that you cannot refuse, and which is, of course, a conception, an idea, a concept, whatever you want to take it, but not necessarily a reality. And at the moment, despite the chaos in Paris, and there is a measure of chaos in Paris, it looks as if everybody's going to stay exactly where they are right now.
That's very interesting because the assumption is that Pochettino will take this feeling like he has to take it now or it might never come from again. But when you're on that carousel of managing the super clubs, you can go and, you know, he could easily manage a super club in Spain, whichever one becomes available at some point in the near future, almost irrespective of what happens in Paris Saint-Germain. It's not that it seems like you can escape Paris Saint-Germain because everybody understands the chaos with your reputation not damaged, not necessarily enhanced, but everybody goes, well, that's just Paris Saint-Germain. It's very difficult
exactly.
for anybody to manage there.
Which is what's happened to Thomas Tuchel, who is having an absolutely phenomenal season. Or I should say, second season at Chelsea after being sacked by PSG, which is a decision that has certainly come back to bite them. And for Pochettino, I mean, I'm not saying that Pochettino wouldn't relish the chance to go elsewhere because he's had so many problems. And to be honest, I really thought last summer that we might have seen the last of Mauricio Pochettino at PSG. And I think we actually touched upon that because his relationship with Leonardo is completely broken. The sports director, that is Leonardo of PSG. And he's finding it very difficult. And he's actually starting to talk about that, about what is expected from a PSG manager compared to what he's had before, you know, be it with Espanyol or Southampton or Tottenham. And basically he has to take care of the whims of his players, some of his players. He's got also to toe the line as far as his owners are concerned. The chain of command at PSG is very, very complicated to explain. And to be honest, it's at times you wonder if there is one. But the manager basically has got to do what he's told to do. And he has very, very little leeway in the way he goes about his job. And there is no doubt that if an offer came for Pochettino at the right moment, he would take it. I mean, his contract runs until 2023. The compensation, should he break that contract, is certainly not something that is out of reach for most big clubs in Europe. We're talking about 9.5 million euros salary. So if it were to happen now, you're talking about something like 12 million euros compensation, which honestly for clubs like Manchester United is small change. But it's not that which matters. What matters is that at the moment, it's not something which... I mean, everything is possible in football, and it's possible that the one person who's going to be bitten is going to be me in 24 hours. It's completely possible. But at the moment, PSG haven't got a replacement lined for Pochettino. They are in the last 16 of the Champions League. They are running away with the French league, which, by the way, if Pochettino left now, he would leave PSG with as a trophy, the only trophy, a Coupe de France, a French Cup. I think that there is something in Pochettino who would quite like the idea to finally have this major title on his honours list, which is a title of French champion, albeit with PSG after what happened last season and Lille and won the title. I don't think that, you know, the prospect of winning a title with PSG is something that is necessarily repulsive to Mauricio Pochettino. You put all these things together and you think, well, why would he leave really now? And also, Manchester United, maybe I'm very naive, but Manchester United were, for once, were very clear in their statement when they decided to part with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Michael Carrick is taking over as a caretaker. Hasn't had too bad a start, by the way. Then they will have what the Italians call a traghettatore, which is the ferryman to take them to the end of the season, which is, I think, a perfectly rational decision. People are now talking about Ernesto Valverde, who is certainly not a bad coach, a bad manager. He's shown that in quite a few clubs, be it Atletico or Barcelona. There might be other people as well who could do that job. And then we take a big breath and we decide on something in May or June. I mean, you can talk now with the people you'd like as your permanent manager, but you make the appointment in May or June. That would be completely rational. But I think that our hunger for big news, because it's Manchester United and PSG, is such that we're kind of willing these things to happen. And the rumors are circulating quite wildly at the moment, despite the fact that some of them might not have any foundation in reality.
You talk about the complicated nature of those working above Pochettino at Paris Saint-Germain. You mentioned the relatively complicated dressing room as well. It's not an easy dressing room to manage. How different would Manchester United be to that, really, given the dressing room at play there, and also this sense that the Manchester United hierarchy kind of liked having Solskjaer as something of a puppet over the last few years?
Oh, it's certain that if you got Mauricio Pochettino, you wouldn't get a puppet, especially the Mauricio Pochettino after PSG, who will definitely not want to be a puppet anymore. Even he's not quite a puppet, by the way, in Paris. It's just that he doesn't have the leeway he would like to have. Well, I think managing a team like PSG at the moment, when you've got Neymar, who was having fun in Brazil before rejoining the team, Lionel Messi, who's finally scored at Parc des Princes, and but whom I'm told already is talking about leaving and going to Miami, which is one of the destinations you will remember that were mentioned when he left Barcelona, but apparently he's not too happy there. Kylian Mbappe, who is not happy at all, and everybody knows about that, even though he's in a fantastic form, in fantastic form himself. I think he's now... scored 44 goals in the calendar year, which is the second highest total in Europe, only behind Robert Lewandowski, or Super Lewandowski, who's got 64. So you've got three unsettled players there. You've got a team that is working without working. You've got... don't forget that also Nasser Al-Khelaifi has got problems of his own, the chairman of PSG, and he's... involved in a number of situations, legal situations, which are a little bit difficult for him. You've got this Leonardo, who is really not liked at all at the club and by anybody. I'm terribly sorry, Leo. Then I can't go into specifics, but I've heard some very credible information about what was happening within the board itself, and which indicated that a few other people were not too happy there. One, a very important person, Sophie Jourdan, who is one of the key people at PSG, has actually just joined a new company, which is a film company, Wild Bunch. The Qataris have just bought it, and she's taken care of that, which would remove a very important person indeed from the hierarchy. See, I could carry on like this for a long time. This club is not in a good place. The team is, though. That's the paradox, and which might show that, well, perhaps Pochettino is onto something, and it's true he's got some decent players to play with. Now, if he were to go to Manchester United, it would be much, much easier. I mean, you talk about the superstars. Basically, you're talking, I think you were, you know, thinking of Cristiano Ronaldo and Paul Pogba.
Mm.
Well, I can't see that. First of all, I don't think that Ronaldo is somebody who poses the same problems as a Neymar, an Mbappe, or a Messi at all. In terms, yes, he might be, the problems that he might pose are not the, you know, he's a fantastic trainer, he's an extraordinary professional. The problems he might pose is the fact that the team is a little bit, well, is unbalanced when he's in there, that he remains a sans-pareil, non-pareil goal scorer, but you're basically, without the ball, you're playing with 10 men or 9 outfield players. Paul Pogba, well, we don't really know. It's a mystery, and but he's not, when he's in the right mood, and maybe he would be in the right mood with Pochettino, he's an extraordinary asset. So he wouldn't be, he would find a squad that is probably too big and a motley crew, really, of players who don't quite fit in with each other. But I have no doubt he would be absolutely fine, as indeed will be whoever takes over for good from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I mean, this squad is just fantastic. It needs some seeing to, and probably, quite a lot of players being taken out of it, sold, moved on, and concentrating on some kind of structure for a team that has been lacking it for a while. But no, I mean, I really don't think it would be a problem at all for him.
Is there a scenario where things work out so well for Pochettino that he decides to stay at Paris Saint-Germain and that actually he isn't an option? How would that play out? What would need to happen?
I think there would need to be changes at the top of the hierarchy, or a different, completely different type of relationship with the hierarchy, and particularly with Leonardo, the sports director. As I said, there were rumours circulating over the last few days that Pochettino was willing to talk about extending his current contract, which expires in 2023, and go to 2024. So that is a possibility. What would be at the back of his mind, that PSG looks set to lose Kylian Mbappe next summer. As I said, there are also doubts as to how long Lionel Messi would like to stay in Paris. Neymar is not getting any younger. I mean, it's possible there's going to have to be a rebuilding job to be done in 6 months' time. But it's not at all impossible. I mean, again, it depends on the type of relationship that can be promised to Pochettino, which he doesn't quite enjoy at the moment.
Okay, so it's not off the table that Manchester United put an interim manager in and don't get Pochettino in the summer as well. Like, because it's just assumed in the English papers this morning that, it's Pochettino, because, well, he was here before, and as you said, he couldn't possibly turn down Manchester United, even though we've seen Jurgen Klopp do it in the past.
It's extraordinary. I find it extraordinary. I have a look at what PSG has done both domestically and in Europe, and compare it to what Manchester United have done since the departure of Sir Alex Ferguson, and just cut and get back to me and see which one is the biggest team. Not the bigger club. Manchester United is a bigger club. Everybody know that. But the bigger team is Paris Saint-Germain. That's obvious. And it's quite extraordinary, this idea that nobody's career is complete without going to Manchester United, which is actually a crazy idea when you think that Manchester United that basically has had Matt Busby, Alex Ferguson, and then other people since the end of World War II. So it's quite extraordinary, yes, is that the job is too big to be refused. And I mean, it could be, it is very tempting. Obviously, I'm sure there are plenty of managers who would love to be managers of Manchester United. But this idea that somehow you can't say no to them is, I think, quite arrogant, really.
Yeah, absolutely. One last point about this. Is there an obvious non-Zidane manager of Paris Saint-Germain waiting in the wings if Manchester United were to pay the compensation and Paris Saint-Germain decide, OK, yeah, grand, who would that be?
To be honest, at the moment, there is nobody that comes straight to mind. PSG, I mean, to be honest, they've already used a few. And I can't see anybody currently who would fit immediately in the PSG role, which is also a problem.
That's a problem. Yeah. That is a big problem.
Yeah,
Paris Saint-Germain are going to say no. Then obviously, like,
I know. I mean, maybe, you know, tell me. I mean, because basically all the big guys, I've got contracts at the moment, and there is another thing to be thought about as well, is that the disruptive impact of the World Cup happening in November, December 2022.
Mm.
Because usually World Cups are a moment where you do have, you know, quite a lot of action on the managerial merry-go-round, but that will be at club level, that is, as well as at national team level. Because, for example, if Deschamps were to leave, I mean, Zidane would go straight into the job with the French national team, for example, which would remove a very big player indeed from the field of possible candidates. So, and I know people keep talking about Zidane going to PSG, but honestly, again, everything is possible and they've got loads of means, and Zidane is not against the idea of making quite a lot of money, and perhaps he's starting to find it a little bit boring by the swimming pool since, what, now 5 months? The last 5 months? And he's somebody who wants, you know, action and so forth. He wants to be involved. But until now, I've always been told by people who are actually around PSG, and in some cases in PSG, that Zidane was a complete no-no.
Right.
And he wasn't interested. Things can change. You know, things can change.
Yeah.
But it would take a remarkable turn of events for Pochettino to go to Manchester. First of all, Manchester United to take the statement they made, to rip it apart. So, and tell Michael Carrick, thank you very much for taking us to the round of 16. Oh, and by the way, Mr. Valverde, Mr. Rangnick and so forth weren't interested in you anymore. And then hire a permanent manager mid-season or almost mid-season, and Pochettino accepting to go and PSG accepting the compensation and being left without a manager when they have just qualified for the last 16 of the Champions League and are running away with the title. And Zidane saying, well, okay, I'm coming out of retirement to take over a club I didn't want to take care of.
It's fantasy. It is fantasy football.
I mean, you know, when you look at it from a distance, and again in football, you know, if we think of what happened this summer with the Ronaldo Messi situation, I think very few of us would have said this could happen. But it did. Even if it was very unexpected, it's not quite as far-fetched as the kind of things that people are talking about right now.
Okay. I do want to talk to you, Philippe, before we go, about this breaking story this morning where two Norwegian television journalists have been arrested in Qatar. It feels a little bit like the world is beginning to wake up and put proper focus on the fact that the World Cup is in Qatar, and there are many stories that need to be covered in depth every time we speak about the World Cup in Qatar. In a weird way, stuff like this is going to help, because you can't ignore the arrest of television journalists who are just reporting on a story in Qatar.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Two journalists from the Norwegian network, NRK. And at the same time, obviously, there's also the situation of one of the former comms people from the Supreme Committee, from the Qatari Supreme Committee, Abdullah Ibhais, who was arrested and was charged with attempted bribery and could risk 5 years in prison, is currently on a hunger strike. And you add to that the report that was published by Amnesty International just a few days ago, which is a damning report really about the rights of migrant workers, particularly in Qatar. You add to that the fact that you now have as well documentaries being released. I mean, there is one on Discovery on the Discovery Channel. I know there are two others which are going to be released very soon, which are all about the awarding of the 2022 World Cup to Qatar by FIFA, and which obviously deal with all the allegations of bribery, corruption and so forth, which have been in the public domain for a while. And this, as we are just 1 year away. And in a way, you know, in Qatar, there were quite a few people who are not too happy with the country bidding for the World Cup, because they said it will attract too much attention on us. And in fact, what is happening is, yes, there is an awful lot of focus. Some of it is on what is going to happen on the pitch. Like recently, Mr. Gianni Infantino, the chairman of FIFA, was in Doha to see what had been done with the stadiums and so forth, where he was joined by Mr. Bolsonaro, strong man of Brazil, and where there were a few photo ops, and that was all positive story and so forth. But the negative stuff is only it's really bad. It's bad in itself, and it's also bad for the organizers, because the focus, you have to say as well, and I should add that Norway was really that close, very, very, very close, from boycotting the World Cup. There was a large movement, grassroots movement, and the Norway Federation is actually run as a democracy up to a point. And the majority of people wanted to bail out, and they said, even if you qualify, don't want to go, don't want to go. And it was only in June, 20th of June, I think, that the Norwegian Federation twisted a few arms, actually quite a lot of arms, and managed to get that motion off the table. No doubt it will come back after what happened. Absolutely no doubt about that. Then you've got as well, the Danish players as well are starting to be very vocal about that. Then you heard what Conor Cody had to say about it as well, which means that the England national team might also start to make comments about the situation in the country, in the host country. Now the qualifiers are over, people are going to talk even more about the situation there. So it is, these are going to be some, I think, very interesting months ahead to the start of the World Cup in November 2022. And I'm afraid at the moment things aren't looking too good for the image of Qatar, who precisely got the World Cup, wanted the World Cup to build their reputation, to build their, find themselves a bigger place on the world stage and so forth. Well, it is a bigger place on the world stage, but not necessarily for the good reasons.
How do you see that playing out over the next little while, Philippe? And maybe the easiest way to ask this question is through your own profession. I mean, it's obviously something that I'm sure you've been considering about how you cover this thing next year.
Yeah.
Where is that thought process at the moment between, I guess, yourself and your colleagues?
As far as I'm concerned, I mean, I myself write for a Norwegian publication which has been very vocal on this question, called Josimar, and I will carry on reporting on the situation there, and I'm quite involved in that as well. I mean, I was one of the people who started the ball rolling when, you know, released the Qatar Gate dossier for France Football all those years ago, and I've carried on working on that. So I see very much my role as a journalist to report on what is happening in the country there in the wider sense. And I don't think it's possible to do anything other than that. And it's a situation that I think all of our colleagues are going to be in. I think the situation is going to be very different between the rights holders and the non-rights holders. That's the way I would put it. If you have bought the rights to the World Cup for a lot of money, be you a radio or especially a television station or a platform, streaming platform, you're not going to want to talk to diss or to disrespect or to say bad things about a country which is hosting a tournament that you've just spent a fortune to broadcast. This is not a problem that you will have if you report for the Irish Times or the Daily Telegraph or France Football or, you know, any of those publications. So, yes, there will be an awful lot. There will be even more coverage. And I think both are going to run in parallel. which is something that we've never seen before, even though we could and should perhaps have seen before. I think we could have seen that for Russia 2018. We didn't see it. It's very different this time. Perhaps people are less wary of confronting what is happening in Qatar than they were of confronting what's happening in the land of Vladimir Putin. We're going to have the situation with China as well in the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
So it's, I think, honestly, it's perhaps what defines the job of a sports journalist these days. We have to cover these issues as much as anything that is happening on the field or in the dressing room or in the boardrooms. You know, the same thing goes for our colleagues who cover Formula One when they saw Lewis Hamilton sport a rainbow-coloured helmet at the qualifiers for the Qatar Grand Prix, which was quite a gesture. You know, it's something as well that, for example, we're discussing as well for the colleagues of ours who are going. I'm not going personally to Qatar for the World Cup, to especially if they are members of LGBTQ plus communities, to make sure that they're safe and how they can report on issues related to their communities there. You see, there it's a. There's going to be a big conversation, I think.
I think
it's not going to be an easy one.
No,
and that's for sure.
We'll have to keep having it because,
in
a weird way, the Qatari authorities are making it much easier to have those conversations by arresting journalists and making everybody aware exactly of what's happening. And so it becomes this kind of inevitability that the
absolutely.
Story,
yeah. And you know what? One of the biggest fears of people who work in the field of human rights is when it comes to Qatar is the fact that once the World Cup has been played, the focus will go elsewhere. And if we don't get things changed quickly, and getting things changed quickly, by the way, only means asking the Qataris to put into practice all the beautiful words they've been using since 2009.
Yeah.
That's because they've kept talking about abolishing this and abolishing that and allowing this and allowing that. And you look at the reality, and the reality, as is put in the Amnesty International report, which again is online, was published just a few days ago. The reality doesn't match the great words, the fine words of the Supreme Committee.
It very rarely does when it comes to stuff like this. Philippe,
yes.
Brilliantly put. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
It's Philippe Beauclair giving us two sides to the big stories in world football at the moment.
OTB AM with Gillette. Proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.